Este disco compacto solo puede ser utilizado en una consola Dreamcast.
And is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your VMUs because mine's run out of batteries. You are listening to episode 20 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. My name is Tom, and I'm joined by a superlative team of Dreamcast experts from around the globe. This is a truly, truly international episode. It usually is anyway. But today I'm joined by Rob.
Hi.
Joined by Aaron the Gagaman Foster.
Hello.
Joined by Caleb.
Hello.
And we have a very special guest joining us all the way from España. That's Spain to those who don't speak Spanish. His name is Carlos Oliveros, and he is one of the main programmers from independent developer Retro... Is it Retro Sumus or Retro Sumus?
Sumus.
Retro Sumus. Hello, Carlos. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We had a few minor technical issues, but we've overcome them, and we've endeavoured to continue and create yet another incredible episode of the world's premier Dreamcast podcast, even if I say so myself. Guys, what we want to do is the usual. We've been away for a while, as people who listen may have realised, but we're back with a bang, hopefully. We'll kick things off as usual, and we'll just have a little bit of a chat about things that we may have picked up or played, and then we will come back to Carlos and talk about all things Retro Summers and independent development. So, Rob, I'm going to come to you first. What have you... No pressure. Rob, what have you been doing? Have you been playing on the Dreamcast? Have you bought anything?
I'm still in the desert, Tom. I'm really sorry.
Good God, Rob.
More time has passed. I still have not picked up anything on Dreamcast. I don't know what it is. I think it's the fact that I've got to this stage where I own pretty much all the games that I really, really want that I can afford. And now to expand my collection, I'd either be buying like games that are down the tier in terms of desirability or are through the roof in terms of price. I think you get to that stage with most consoles. I know I have with a fair few where you sort of get to this natural limit that your finances or your sort of your interest in games can take you. And I've sort of got there with the Dreamcast. We need to try harder to find some more bargains.
Need to get into them anime dating sims. That's what it is.
Exactly. I need to dive into those.
You'll be there all year.
And then some. So I will try and get back onto the Dreamcast, but there's still nothing. In terms of Saturn, though, my Saturn adventure still continues. I managed to pick up a high Saturn.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
I was really, really pleased about that. It's in really good condition. It's got all the original stuff with it. And I've literally just got it hooked up earlier today, and I've been playing a bit of Ace Gaiden on it. And yeah, it's great.
Can I be cheeky and ask you how much you paid for it?
That was $120.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Congratulations for that.
Thank you. It was...
If you don't mind me interrupting.
No, not at all. I felt it was a good price.
Now, do you have the accoutrements for Saturn, for example?
Good word.
Do you have the...
Wow.
Tom, please. Did you get the memory card that allows you to do the 4 or 2 megabyte thing? Did you get that?
I already had that. The Action Replay 4 meg auto. I already had that, so I've slotted that in. So I think it's pretty much the best. Well, apart from the Navi, because they did the Navi High Saturn as well, didn't they? The one that you could stick in your car?
Yeah.
I'd love that one, but I know that one's stupid money, so I don't think that'll ever happen. So in terms of my Saturn setup, I think this is the best it's going to get. So I've got the high Saturn with the 4 meg auto stuck in the back, and it's great.
Awesome. Carlos, as you're a guest, I'm going to come to you next. Have you picked up anything recently on your travels for the Dreamcast or otherwise?
Well, as I think I told you in a previous email, I sent my very, my dear Japanese Dreamcast to a friend who is modding.
Okay.
To add some VGA.
Cool.
Very
output.
Cool. Yeah. And
nice.
Some, you know, the Dream Shell and multi BIOS. I don't know if that's the way you pronounce it in English.
BIOS.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
BIOS. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So I don't have my Dreamcast with me right now, but during Retro Barcelona, I played Ghost Blade by Whocast and Fruity or whatever the name for this game by Retro Guru is. because the guy who ported the game to the Dreamcast, Xavi Vallejo, aka Indiquette. Yeah. You know this guy?
I think
Tom calls him the living legend. he was there. He was selling the games, the physical copies for €3 each. So I said, man, it would be a sin not to buy this for just €3 because the PC version of the game is also contained in the same disk.
Really?
Yeah, so...
I didn't even know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, you can stick the Dreamcast disk in the PC and it will play on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a normal CD-ROM. So,
yeah.
So both the Dreamcast and the PC versions are included in the same disk.
I had no idea.
So yeah, I got my copy there from Xavi, and those are the two last Dreamcast games that I've been playing.
I saw pictures... Now I have to ask about this because I saw pictures of the new Dreamcast game, the Bomberman type game, and oh my god, I can't believe I forgot the
name. Alice Dreams?
Yeah, Alice Dreams. Did you see that in action?
Of course. I mean, the guys from Dreamcast.es, from Sega Saturno and Retro Sumus, and the guys from Alice Dreams Tournament, we were all sharing the same huge booth in Retro Barcelona.
Don't say too much about Retro Barcelona now. We're going to talk about that in a bit.
Okay. So yeah, I saw the game in motion. We all played it, and yeah, yes, we did. And I will shut my mouth.
I'm sorry. As always, Tom and I are on different wavelengths. I'm sorry, Tom.
It's fine. thanks, Carlos. Thank you for sharing. Caleb, how about yourself? What have you been doing?
As you all know, because we all celebrated Thanksgiving.
Oh yeah, sorry. On Thursday. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, yes. I'm sure all of you had a great Thanksgiving.
Oh, so much turkey! So much turkey.
as far as I know, everybody celebrates Thanksgiving. So basically, and then Black Friday came around and I got no Dreamcast deals on Black Friday, unfortunately.
Yeah, where was my 75% off Zero Gun? I was looking for that everywhere.
And then I went to my mailbox and what did I find? But my copy of Pure Solar has finally come in. And my goodness, the case that they sent it in, because they sent it kind of in a box. So I was like, oh no, it's like, what happens if it like bounces around? They sent this thing in the most protective plastic case I've ever seen on an independent release of any video game. It's amazing. It's sealed with a Watermelon Games seal of approval, and it looks amazing. And I unfortunately have been sick, so I have not had a chance to play it. But as far as I can see, just as a independent game, this is a collector's edition already because the game is just, it's so professionally manufactured and it's great. And I cannot wait to crack it open and play it. Again, I've kept myself purposely ignorant of this game, even when it was released on the PS3 and other platforms. So anyways, I've got this game and I cannot wait to stream it. It's an amazing game and it's amazing packaging. Very happy I got this.
Fantastic. Aaron, did you say you'd got the game as well?
Yeah, mine came as well. And yeah, as you said, it's got this lovely plastic thing with like the sealed little...
And it's custom. The plastic thing is custom. And you know it's custom because it's got Watermelon Games emblem right on the plastic thing. It's amazing.
What's quite funny about it as well is you see the little seal in it and you think, oh no, I'm going to have to open it to play the game, but I actually managed to slip the case out of the plastic and not cut the
thing. I've been trying to do that too.
So now it's like, ooh, does anyone want a brand new sealed copy of Pure Solar? The only snag is the game's invisible, but you get the plastic. But yeah, I played it a little bit. I saw my girlfriend, she bought the PS3 version of the game quite a while back, and so I ended up seeing most of the game beforehand. And yeah, they did a really bloody good job with the Dreamcast version. Yeah, they've added quite a few little features, which I think were patched into the downloadable versions. Like they actually let you set it so the characters are constantly moving at full speed rather than just walking slowly and then you hold a button to run. And then there's things like you can speed up the animations for the battles, which is handy if you want to get through them quickly. But then they move so quickly that it's kind of hard to tell what's going on. So I ended up having it on just one times anyway. And you can also change the encounter rate. So if you want to get through a dungeon without bumping into too many enemies, you can set it to like half times or quarter times, or if you want to grind a bit and you want to fight loads of things, you can set it up to four times. So yeah, these features, as far as I know, were not in the downloadable version, so they've added them late, you know, for the Dreamcast version, and I think they might be patching it into the others. Yeah, I've never really been much of an RPG fan, but recently, thanks to that coming out and being, you know, excited for that release coming in, I've actually been sort of getting into RPGs. It helps that also, if you, I don't know if you saw my post on the Dreamcast Junkyard about what I picked up at London Gaming Market,
yeah. So you picked up a few things there, didn't you? Go through those if you like as well.
Yeah, I got a couple RPGs there, including the first Eldorado Gate, Volume 1. Obviously, I can't read what's going on, so I can only vaguely play it, but it's got really lovely graphics and nice music and all that kind of stuff, and just sort of messing around in that. But I've mostly been playing Evolution, which is a game I remember renting back when it came out, and that was back before I really had any patience with RPGs. But now I feel like Evolution is a really good like level entry RPG. I know it's not like a classic, it's quite basic, it's kind of poorly translated in places. Really simplistic, sort of like dungeon crawler RPG. But I found myself really getting into it, you know, like trying to manage the items and get through the dungeons and all that kind of stuff.
That's interesting to hear, actually, because it's the one game that I've been meaning to play, but I've never actually gotten into. I think I played it for about 5 minutes about 10 years ago, and that's it.
Obviously, if you're thinking, you know, if you're someone that's played all the classic RPGs or some of them, you know, you'd probably look at this and go, oh, it's just really simplistic and nothing much to it. The story's really simple and whatnot. But I don't know. There's something about it that's just really appealing to me, and I've ended up putting quite a few hours into it so far. I've got quite a few other games there which I've played a little bit, but it's mainly been Evolution. I've been playing some games with the twin sticks.
Yeah,
so I've got the Saturn twin sticks, and then I've got the Total Control 3 that lets you use it, and I was actually trying out Outrigger with it, which was really good with it actually, and also Mars Matrix was actually surprisingly good with it. Because you could set each type of shot onto the different sticks, so you only use one stick, but you can set it so the triggers are the shooting, and then the buttons on the top are the repel thing you can do in that game. So that was kind of cool to do.
Have you tried Bungaeo with it?
Not yet. No, that's another one I need to try, because that would be really nice if it did work. Especially if it did work twin stick, it'd be perfect for that game. Yeah. But I'm not entirely sure if that would be the case. I guess the other game I've been playing a little bit is Slave Zero. I got my hands on the American copy to get rid of my PAL one. Not a bad game, I suppose, but I think the main problem with that game is its frame rate. It's really kind of choppy.
It's really muddy as well, the visuals. So
yeah, it's a bit... It's not too bad. Quite blocky in places, but like, I don't know, it's all right. I like that they give you a first-person mode in it, so it just plays like a first-person shooter. One thing I remember in reviews for that game, they said it was... It didn't really look very city-like. You know, it's supposed to be your giant robot and everyone's driving around. And sometimes you see little cars driving around and little people, but not many. But it's really fun to sort of like walk in front of like where cars are driving and they try to drive around you and then they're just driving off the bridges. You see them just like crash into each other and stuff. It's quite amusing. Mainly what I've been playing. I've bought a load more games than that, but most of those I've only put like half hour into. So
cool. That's a good good selection. I won't go on too long for what I've been doing, but I've been playing a little bit of a GQ Powerful Pro Baseball. You may have seen an article I wrote on the Junkyard about that yesterday.
That actually looked really interesting.
It's so much fun. It's really easy to pick up and play. The controls are just really intuitive. Even though there's not a single scrap of English throughout the entire game or in the manual, it's really easy to just suss out what you're meant to do.
I was quite surprised to find out it was like sprite-based when you put up screenshots for it. I always just assumed it was going to be 3D.
Yeah, and because my capture device is really crap, it makes the pictures look really pixelated, but it's really smooth on the screen, on the TV screen. The sprite work is really, really good.
Now, Gagaman, was that one of the games that you tried to play with the fishing controller?
It wasn't that one. It was World Series.
All right, well...
It was the maracas with World Series
Baseball. You know what you got to do? You got to try to use either the maracas or the fishing controller to try to play that.
Give that a go, yeah. I've also been playing Capcom vs. SNK and King of Fighters 99. King of Fighters 99 for two reasons. I also picked up the Dream Connector, which is a thing for... It's like a cheap version of the Total Control. You put PlayStation and Saturn joypads in. and it works perfectly. It's amazing. Even with driving games like Sega Rally 2, it actually makes it more playable with the D-pad rather than the analog stick. I don't know why, but it seems to. It's great.
I should try that with Crazy Taxi or something, because I remember getting blisters from playing Crazy Taxi so much when it first came out because of the little bubbles on the analog stick.
Oh, yeah.
Talks about that, but I figure it's just, you know, y'all have weak thumbs or something, because I've never I personally have never run into that problem, and I've played the Dreamcast lots.
I have run into that problem, but because of playing Capcom versus SNK way too much. I mean, for hours, well, late into the night. Really huge blisters.
You gotta get thumbs. Those tiger knees. Tiger knees.
Yeah, apart from that, I'd be playing Sonic Wings 2 on the Neo Geo CD, which is brilliant, and modern stuff, WRC 5 and Advanced Warfare on the PS4, but we don't want to talk about that. Boring. Interestingly, just moving on to the next subject, the Dreamcast is it's 17 years old this week, or last week, depending on when you're listening to this. So yeah, happy birthday to the Dreamcast, I suppose we should be saying. But it doesn't seem like 17 years ago, does it, that it came out?
I mean, a lot of people, like me, I never had any video games growing up, so the reason I got into the Dreamcast, because that was literally my first console that I got when I was actually had my own money to buy a console, you know? And that was at the end of the Dreamcast's life cycle, really. So I think a lot of people did that because the Dreamcast was very affordable and amazing at the end of its life cycle. So yeah, a lot of people, you know, $20 used, like $50 new. There was a brief period of time where a lot of people like me picked it up.
Carlos, I've got a question for you. Can you remember the launch in Spain, the European launch of the Dreamcast?
Well, I remember those international ads. Hmm. You know, those you had the bullfighter saying, you know, ole.
Oh yeah, and then you had the English one saying, come and have a go if you think you had enough, to the French guy, and then the
French guy saying, all your women want to sleep with us.
Which I remember, that's what it says, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I remember thinking, what the hell are you talking about? Like, you know, I remember feeling sort of offended.
Exactly. Yeah.
Adverts in Europe for the Dreamcast were kind of bad.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
but you know, I sort of liked the bullfighter one. I thought it was funny. Then I remember the barber. You know that barber you have been trying to chase across the globe.
Yeah.
I remember that
Tom's mystery man.
Yeah, because it was translated, of course, and dubbed in Spanish. The whole why don't we play together?
Yeah.
Por qué no jugamos juntos? So it was.
Excuse me?
Sounded really. it's really well. It's a literal translation, and it. I remember it sounded really exciting. You know, really inspiring. Really, man, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
You know, I want to whatever that means. Because I didn't. I think. Yeah. I mean, I think I didn't even have a proper internet connection at home. So when I saw that, I'm not sure I really, you know, back in this day.
Yeah, knew what it was, knew the concept of it kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a few years ago already. And I remember I thought, I'm not sure it means what I think it means, but, you know, I feel I want to be a part of this. I want that console because it looks so cool. I knew it meant Sega is looking cool again. You know, I hadn't had that feeling like at school, for example, when talking about my Saturn.
Yeah.
You know,
I loved how that felt.
I loved Virtua Fighter 2 or Sonic Jam. But there wasn't that feeling of being the cool guy. You know,
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah,
in my school, I think I may have been the only kid in the entire school that had a Saturn.
There was about three of us in my school, so I wasn't completely alone. Carlos, one quick question. I've heard that the barber advert was actually filmed in Spain, and that the barber himself is actually a real barber. So if you could just drive around Spain looking for this guy for me, that would.
I have no idea. Who told you that? Are you sure it was filmed in Spain, or you're just kidding me, right?
No, one of the guys who worked at Sega during the time of the Dreamcast, he said that that's what he'd heard.
Okay. Tom, one of these days you're going to have to face facts and just look at the numbers.
He's probably dead.
That was 18 years ago. You know what I'm saying? He's probably, he's the most healthy living guy, you know?
Right, Dreamcast 17 years old. It's amazing. Mine still all work fantastically well. I'm sure your guys does. Yours, you guys, Dreamcast. When I can speak English properly, your Dreamcasts all work fine as well.
All Dreamcast working fine.
Interestingly, this week I also, or last week even, I also got something else, which was the Neo Geo Pocket link cable. I did also do an article about this on the Junkyard, but Rob, you're quite a fan of the Neo Geo Pocket.
I am, yeah, totally.
Yeah, you asked me to...
Me too.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we all are. I just... Rob wanted me to report back on my my findings with the Neo Geo Pocket link cable, and I must say, I was a little underwhelmed by what you can actually do with it, because it only really works with the two games that I own. I own... King of Fighters R2, and then that one will communicate with King of Fighters 99 Evolution and King of Fighters... Yeah. Is it just King of Fighters 99, the American version? And basically all it does is if you go into the menu on the... on the Dreamcast game, you can choose to communicate, and then all you're allowed to do really is just to unlock like artwork or different... I think they're called strikers in the King of Fighters games on the Dreamcast. Not really a great deal that you can actually do with it. It's nice to have as a little piece of like memorabilia and a nice, cool item. But yeah, it's a bit of a... For me, anyway, a bit of a missed opportunity. I know there's other games that use it, but I don't own them, so I've not been able to try it with those.
In a way, it kind of sounds like the Dreamcast equivalent of Amiibo, because like those, you just sort of unlock like tiny things in the games as well. They don't have like a huge deal with them. It kind of sounds similar to that, really.
Yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
like, they just help you gain more points. You know, I know in Capcom vs. SNK you can gain points for the shop in the Dreamcast game. And if you play the SNK versus Capcom Chaos on Neo Geo Pocket, it lets you gain points and you can trade them between both, because both games have shops in them to unlock the content. So basically, they just help you unlock content faster.
Yeah, I like the idea. I like... That's always the thing with the Pocket, that link cable between the two. I like that idea. You could play on your Dreamcast and then you go out work and you're on the bus and you're commuting and you're still helping yourself to unlock things on the game, but you can do it on your Pocket Color. But
getting a little bit like the VMU in some ways.
I like the Neo Geo Pocket Color. I mean, I don't like the way you can't see the screen a lot of the time. You have to have perfect lighting conditions, but it's good.
But if you do have good light, that screen is great. Like,
it is.
The screen is amazing.
It's beautiful.
So, like, crystal clear, like all the little pixels, you can see every little detail.
Listen
it's
to our
lovely.
I'm listening. I'm taking it on board. I'm digesting it.
And that micro switch stick is still the best thing ever. I love that micro stick. Yeah, it's noisy, but like you couldn't sit in bed and not wake anyone up with it going.
You mean this?
That's it.
Beautiful.
That's the
it's
one.
It's like
had it at hand.
It's like listening to Mozart.
Oh, Rob, we need to chat.
We need to talk.
Now, I think we'll move on slightly, a little bit of a change of tack. A few weeks ago, we spoke about this mystery Gundam disc that came up on eBay.
Yes.
And we were in a bit of a bidding war with persons unknown, shall we say. And I was kind of a bit annoyed that, you know, eventually the auction got to a point where I wasn't prepared to bid any higher for it, because I just thought, I don't really know what this is that I'm going to be getting if I do win it. And also, it's a lot of money. It ended up going for like something like 180 euros or something. Now, I can't say too much about this, but it's been revealed to me that...
your network spies have reported back to you. You mean?
Indeed, yes. I've been contacted by a person, again, persons unknown, who shall remain unknown for now anyway. I actually know who actually won the disc, and there's some exciting information coming up in the next couple of weeks. I can't say any more than that. You can probably guess what it is, but the game will not be going into someone's private collection. Yeah, I've been sworn to secrecy myself, and I think maybe you, Carlos, have both been sworn to secrecy.
I'd like to add that I've been in contact with that network of spies for some years now.
So it's yeah, it's all a bit hush hush, but rest assured, it's coming soon. Hopefully, maybe. Didn't hear that from me. Okay.
Actually, yeah, sorry to interrupt you, Tom. A couple of friends and I myself were asked to donate a little money for in order to win that auction. You know, I mean, we were asked for help in order to be able to get that disc.
Yeah, I mean, and when it was revealed who had actually won the disc, I made a small donation as well after the fact. So yeah, okay. It really is a kind of a community. It's a community effort. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's really cool that we've managed to. Oh, not us, but you know who has acquired this has managed to do so and is doing what they plan to do. So yeah, it's exciting times. Hmm. Good stuff.
Cool. It's always good when it goes to someone that can actually do something with it and, you know, not just shove it on the shelf and go, well, that's mine now. Yeah. It's all mine. Yeah. No one else gets to see it.
Yeah.
Seal this in plastic and it will never be opened ever.
Let's move on to our main topic of discussion. It's you, Carlos. As I said earlier in the...
This is your life.
Earlier in the episode, we are joined by Carlos Oliveros from Retro Summers. Now, you are obviously a Spanish development team, and you're working on several games at the moment. Two very interesting-looking games. Certainly games that haven't really been tried before, certainly from independent developers on the Dreamcast. Really, I just wanted to talk a little bit about you guys, how you got together, and also, you know, the games that you're developing. What's the vision? What's the aim of what you do? Can we start at the beginning? Like, how did Retro Summers become what you are today? How did you meet, get together?
I think it all began with Pierre Solar, actually. Yeah, I mean, I was when you guys were talking about the Dreamcast version, I was about to interrupt you again to add that I was one of the translators for Pierre Solar. I mean, I helped translate the game into Spanish. Then I translated all the extra stuff for the HD versions of the game and for the Dreamcast version as well. So I was very impressed when I received my it's a very nice box, the collector's edition, so well designed, you know, so crafted, so full of detail. But then I sold it during Retro Barcelona because I really don't have the patience for RPGs. The thing is, we all met because of Pierre Solar, because as I said, I helped translate the game into Spanish. Then I put, I was guilty of putting Tulio from Watermelon and Chuy, also known as Daniel Lancha, the lead programmer for Pierre Solar HD. I put them in contact. So so I introduced Chuy to Tulio. Then I began to talk to Chuy more often, you know, while he was programming or reprogramming the game, and I was translating all the new stuff and beta testing the game again. We began to talk more often. Then Abel, who is with us in the team as well, he was responsible for the Mode 7 stage of Pierre Solar. You know, he redesigned that stage in 3D. He's a 3D designer. And then one day we decided to create something of our own, you know, to get together, and we said, okay, we should explore some genres or game mechanics that we think that haven't been tackled so often. On-rail shooters, you know, like Space Harrier.
Yeah.
Visual novels. Visual novels have been you know, so popular in Japan for about 30 years, and it's a genre that hasn't, you know, it has never really evolved, you know, beyond its original concept. The only thing we had new, you know, in games like X-Blaze for the PS3 is they have some animation, some voice work, stuff like that, but not really any new game mechanics. So we thought, okay, a visual novel, but with some new stuff, puzzles to solve, maybe some other new mechanics we don't really want to reveal yet.
That's fine. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Okay, cool. So as you guys know, these are our two projects right now. Ameba, a visual novel, Western made visual novel, Western set visual novel as well. It's set in Madrid, Spain. And Xenocider is our personal 3D tribute to Space Harrier.
Yes, yes. I'll come to Xenocider in a second, but with Ameba, I think it's important and also quite cool that it's an original take on what is generally a genre that is populated mainly by anime style visual novels. And what I like about Ameba is the fact that it's like a film noir. It's got a very European flavor to it. And that's what's original. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love personally the character design of Hugo, because he's just such an interesting looking guy. It's like, wow, this is bearded looking dude. It's like, I can't, like a detective story. That's really interesting to me.
I knew I wanted a more mature looking main character. I knew I didn't need a handsome, young, handsome officer, or, you know.
You want someone who's like weather-beaten, who's like, he's been there, done it, seen it, you know, he's kind of got a lot of history behind him.
Exactly. I mean,
See, a lot of these games like Snatcher and like Police Knots, there's always some story element there to kind of explain why this young looking guy would have such, like, you know, such a deep plot with such, you know, a background to him, but it always made me upset. There's never like just a real like nice bearded dude. God, I just love the fact there's a main character with a beard.
The beard. 10 out of 10.
Well, the thing is, I really wanted a character that could really have a believable past, like he's feeling guilty for. About something that happened 20 years ago. So I needed a character that could have been an adult 20 years ago. You know, someone who could have been already working at the Spanish police 20 years ago. Someone who can tell you great stories, you know, from 20 years ago. And I want all of that to actually make sense in the story. You know, so it's all going to be inspired by, by true stories that have happened in our country. So
it was interesting. So I was going to ask if you'd chosen to set it in Madrid for a specific reason other than that you know Madrid pretty well, or stories you mentioned that happened in real life were they set in Madrid?
Well, there's two reasons mainly. We want to tell a story that is inspired by, you know, real stuff that has happened there.
Yeah.
Real stuff you can find there. Also, we can show recognizable environments. You know, like the Plaza de España, Spain Square, or I don't know, this subway entrance, this very recognizable royal palace or stuff like that.
Sure, yeah.
You know, we want to show, to feature real places, real environments. But also, I thought, okay, people may be expecting us to show, to feature a main character that reminds them of, say, Bruce Willis, you know, I don't know, a cop from New York or something like that. But I said, okay, I'm not Woody Allen, you know? So I've been to New York, but I don't really know New York so well, you know, as to tell a really believable story set in New York, then I'm not Guy Ritchie. Is that the correct
name?
Yeah, yeah. So,
know what I mean?
I love. I mean, I honestly love his movies, but I could never tell a compelling, believable story set in London, for example. You know,
so yeah, man. That's good to write from what you know. You know.
So I don't want to break in here too much. But I do want to ask, so can you say if the story is going to be set in, like, you know, modern times, or is it kind of in the future?
No,
or?
It's a current day. It's absolutely current day.
But that's really interesting to me, because there's been so many of these games that have actually come to the West. And I'm talking about games that are, you know, quasi, like Rise of the Dragon, Snatcher, A Police House, and they're always set in, like, the Blade Runner future of, like, New York City or some future thing. So it's, I don't think any modern game has ever come to the West where they actually put the setting in, like, it's happening right along this time.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
somewhere that's like a believable place.
It made sense, you know, just to set the story in a current real environment in current day. So I actually I have been in contact with a Spanish police commissioner for some time now, because we want to make things, as I said, believable. So I mean, I don't want a potential buyer of the game, you know, a potential user, player, to be playing the game and to think, man, that's not how Spanish police works. You know, because people expect our main character to act like, you know, CSI, you know, the TV show.
Sure, yeah.
Or to,
yeah.
I mean, or like, or like, yeah. I mean,
God,
or like,
yeah,
like
that's,
played out.
Boy, that's played
and
out.
Scully from The X-Files.
Yeah.
I mean, people who investigate, run, jump through the roofs and chase the criminals, and then also perform the autopsy. Is that the?
That's a really good point.
It's been a while since there's been a game like that. The only game I can think of that actually did that was Police Quest. And that game was so interesting because they actually worked with real policemen and did something that was, like, by the rules. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Actually, this is not something I really wanted to reveal, but, yeah, why not? We would like to dedicate the game to some real-life policemen or policewomen, you know, to dedicate the game to policemen and policewomen who, you know, who enjoy their job, who do their job because they believe in it, you know, this kind of thing. Because
that's really cool. Yeah. No, I totally understand. Yeah, Carlos. While we're talking about your games, I wanted to touch a little bit on Xenosaga as well. Now, Xenosaga is going to be an homage to things like Space Harrier, and is it true to say maybe a little bit like Starwing as well, Star Fox?
Well, I'm not sure there's a Star Fox influence on my part, but I know Chewie has been a Nintendo fanboy for decades now. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the only thing that gets us into arguments from time to time. because Dreamcast is the only Sega console he's owned. And the only Sega console that he has really liked. Only last year, I think, or 2 years ago, I sold him his first Sega Saturn. And since then, he's been tampering with it and, you know, doing his homework, his research about the console. So, okay, the thing is, maybe for him, yeah, maybe there's a Star Fox influence. But our main influence are Space Harrier, of course. Sin and Punishment.
Oh yeah,
for the Nintendo 64.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because our main character is going to be not always flying like Space Harrier, but walking, running, jumping. There will be platforms to jump on, or to to blast in order to you know to go through and obstacles and stuff like that.
It's so exciting to see something like this because you know you've got a lot of games that come out. You know that things like Ghostblade. I like Ghostblade; it's a great game, but it's in the traditional mold of other games that we've seen before from independent developers. This is a new 3D game, and that's why I'm so excited by it. Especially because I'm a fan of Space Harrier as well. And I mean, for those people who are listening who maybe not seen Xenosider, if you just go to Google and type Xenosider, it's spelled XenoSider. You will see, you know, early screenshots of this. What again? It's an homage to Space Harrier, and it looks great. I've seen some of your concept art as well for the different types of enemies that are going to be in the game. Oh. They look really interesting. You've got that big jellyfish thing, and like you know, like the rock people, you know, that throw the rocks. Yeah, yeah, I just think it looks really it looks really cool. I just love the visual style of it.
I'm currently working on our next video. That's going to feature the first stage boss for that stage, for that desert stage. So, hopefully in a few days, you can you can check out that, the design for that stage boss.
Awesome.
Nice.
Now, I know this is a very long shot, but is there any chance you'd be considering doing the whole 3D glasses thing in some functionality?
Compatible with the Master System 3D.
I'm basically saying that as a joke. The last time I played Space Harrier was on the Master System with the glasses.
On the 3DS. Well, we really hadn't thought about it. You know, I can ask Chewie if maybe there's a way of, I don't know,
packing some red and blue glasses with the game.
It was mainly a joke.
Maybe we could include, you know, some, yeah, these cardboard 3D glasses inside the case, even if they, you know, even if they are completely useless.
I think that's an actually great idea.
Did you see House of the Dead Overkill on the PS3 did that? They actually packaged it with a...
I have the game, yes. I like that.
Yeah, it was cool.
While we're on the subject for asking for things for you to put in the game, can you do a Tyra Jaguar version as well?
A what?
I'm sorry, what is that? But...
just ignore me, I'm talking rubbish. one other thing I wanted to ask while we're on this subject is what is the retro gaming scene like in Spain? Is it quite big? Is it quite popular?
I think we can't complain. I mean, we've had Retro Madrid for, I don't know, 15 years now, I think.
Okay.
And Retro Barcelona for, I think, 3 or 4 years now. And for what I've been told, they are among the biggest or best retro indie events in Europe. I think there's a very active scene around the Spectrum and Amstrad and the whole Commodore computers and all that. And then there's teams like 1985 Alternativo.
Oh yeah,
you know the guys who developed Oh Mami Genesis.
Oh, and, of course, yeah.
And who are developing Antarex?
Oh, you know this. Yeah. Yeah,
this is a shmup for the Mega Drive.
Oh man,
I played the game a couple of weeks ago in Retro Barcelona, and I think they are doing a fantastic job.
Oh, look forward to that.
Really, I mean, there's some really neat graphic effects, some great pixel art.
Nice.
So really, I'm really eager to get a copy of that.
Mm.
Well, also there's the we call them Mojon Twins. I don't know. These guys who developed some Spectrum games, the UWOL. Do you know this game? Quest for Money?
Yeah, I think it was
released on the Spectrum and the Mega Drive.
Yeah, I've heard of the Mega Drive one, yeah.
Yeah. And then, well, there's...
I just wanted to pick those up, the Mega Drive indies.
It's a Tiny Little Game. Yeah.
I think I missed out on Oh Mummy. I think that's like sort of vanished now, but
I always found it strange that there's not a lot of indie games for the Mega CD, because you'd think with it being a CD format, there'd be a lot of Mega CD indie games. But a lot of the ones for the Mega Drive come out on cartridge.
Yeah, that is interesting, because it is, you can easily sort of make games that would run on it. I mean, I know there was a Sonic ROM hack that was actually released for Mega CD, like you could actually just burn it and play it on there.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Sonic Mega Mix?
Yes. Yeah.
I love that one.
Mm.
It seems to me that, you know, not just the Dreamcast, but the retro scene in general is it's not just big here in the UK. It's big sort of all over sort of mainland Europe as well, obviously, and the US. But yeah, I mean, it's been really cool hearing some, you know, what is essentially exclusive, you know, news from excuse the expression, Carlos, but from the horse's mouth, from yourself, you know, the guy who is creating these games, and it's really cool to, you know, be able to talk to you about them. One thing, I don't want to kind of put pressure onto you or put you on the spot, but when are you kind of looking to release these games? Is there anything set in stone yet, or is it just kind of loose?
Absolutely not in stone.
Okay.
I mean, I think not less than a year from now.
Okay.
We would like to release Ameba in maybe 1 year from now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I cannot talk about an estimated release date for Xenocider, because we are currently looking into it, both, you know, with Abel, our 3D designer,
mm-hmm.
and with a certain publisher,
yeah,
we have been in talks with.
Okay.
So I don't really want to talk about
no, that's cool,
you know, that's
fine.
Thing yet.
It makes perfect sense.
No, but yeah, I just want to say thank you for giving us all that. I mean, it's cool that there's stuff coming out for the Dreamcast, and that you are one of the main people. So yeah, thank you for your efforts.
Getting some more new genres as well, which haven't really been touched on the Dreamcast at all, outside of like some Japanese visual novels, but otherwise, you know, getting a new visual novel and a Space Harrier style game is really awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on to our next topic, and that is, I don't know if you guys have seen this, Picks and Love Editions. They are the team, the publishing house, who are responsible for the quite awesome History of Sonic the Hedgehog book. Has anyone seen this?
Yeah, I've got the Sonic book.
I've seen it. I don't own it.
It's really good. It's really high quality. Basically, they have released an image on Facebook this week of a prototype Dreamcast shell that I've certainly never seen before, and apparently it is genuine. It's come from Sega Japan, I believe, and this also tells me that they are looking at releasing a Dreamcast book, which is, yeah, pretty exciting. I don't know if you had any thoughts about this book and what, you know, what it may contain. Jump in, anyone?
Can we just talk about like this prototype they did show off? I think it's probably believable, but I'm just curious about this logo on it. The thing that says, like, Planet, and it's got, like, an S in the middle.
Planet S?
Yeah, it's really Planet Sega or something, I don't know. But you can kind of tell it's, like, a sort of early version of what they ended up going with, because it's mostly the same, except they just sort of changed some shapes, and they moved the light from where the controllers are, brought it up to the top.
For those people who've not seen it, basically, this prototype Dreamcast shell, it looks, for all intents and purposes, exactly the same as a standard Dreamcast, but the buttons on the top are triangular and sort of point downwards to the outer corners of the Dreamcast shell, and then the triangular light, as Aaron just said, has been moved from the CD drawer, or the CD lid, down to the front where the controller ports are. So it's not that different. Also, the little squares that go around the outside of the CD door have actually been moved as well. But as Aaron just said, the logo is, it says Planet S, and that doesn't really mean much to me, at least, anyway. So.
But it could be something that's just not been discovered by anyone yet. Obviously, we knew about Project Drow and Katana being like the prototype names of the two different systems that they were juggling about before they decided on one of them. Like the Katana, I think, was the one they went with. And yeah, there might have been loads of other ideas in between there. Planet S might have been another name that they had at some point. It's hard to say.
I mean, I haven't, as I said, I've seen the Sonic one. I don't own any of these editions, but they are obviously lovely. But what I'm amazed with is how well connected Pix and Love appear to be, because almost as if they went, yeah, we're going to do a Dreamcast edition, and just immediately got that.
I don't know if it would have been immediate. They must have been chatting with Sega for quite a while, and obviously they've got contact with Sega because of the Sonic book, and I think they've done other books in the past that involve in Sega. Like, I think there was like a Mega Drive book of some kind that only came out in France.
And yeah, that was interesting that you said, Aaron, that they've done a lot of other console books, but they only ever came out in France. So
yeah.
Yeah, hopefully they will release this one.
Very few of their books have been translated. They do books almost all the time. I mean, I'm subscribed to them on my... I've got like an email subscription ever since I bought the Sonic book a while back. And yeah, they seem to be putting out books every so often. I think they've got a Final Fantasy one coming out. They've been doing all sorts.
I just thought it was interesting. I thought it was worth talking about just because, it's not going to be... I can't see it being in like direct competition with the book that we're potentially looking at releasing, because... We're doing it. Ours is going to be kind of like a fan-made one, like fans for the fans kind of thing. I'm really interested to see what they're doing. If there is new Dreamcast information,
especially if they uncover some stuff, yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I'm all for that. I'd love to be able to see some new Dreamcast prototypes. So yeah, it's interesting.
Did you see that Mega Drive book that was made by Read-Only Memory a while back? British
yes.
publisher. They
yeah,
wrote
they
that
did,
book.
Yeah.
I have that book, and I love it.
Yeah, they managed to uncover some like concept arts of early designs from the Mega Drive and early controller designs and all that kind of stuff. So maybe we will get some stuff like that for this Dreamcast one.
Yeah, that book is full of great, great content.
Yeah, it's got some really nice concept art. Like, it's got an early version of the Western box art for Gunstar Heroes, and they were going to go for a more realistic look rather than what they went with. It's really weird.
And there's some really interesting concept art for Sonic the Hedgehog, for instance,
yeah.
and some designs for
stuff that's never been seen before. Yeah.
Yeah, and some designs for the Phantasy Star series as well. I really love that. Yeah, it's a great book.
All right, guys. Is there any other business that we would like to discuss? Actually, Carlos, I know you've got some quite big news that you wanted to share with us. You have the floor, sir.
Well, yeah. When Tom invited me to join the DreamPod, I told him that maybe it was the right time to share some news with you guys. Because as you guys may know already, we announced that we want to release Ameba not only on PC and Dreamcast, but also on the Sega Saturn.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean...
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, the Saturn has been the tough girl for you know, for so many years now. It's like untouchable, you know?
Yeah, even back when it was out, most developers didn't know what to do with it. So.
Well, yeah. So as I said, Chewie has been tampering with his Saturn for about 2 years now, I think. So we are sure that there's a way that we can release Ameba on the Saturn.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
So, you think it'd be like in high resolution mode or anything like that?
Well, I cannot confirm that yet.
No, of course.
You know, not. I mean we will
that
try.
Would be cool, though.
I mean, yeah, we will try, but we cannot really confirm that yet.
No.
The thing is, we will release the game in a box that resembles the old Japanese cardboard boxes that contained, the extra memory, the extra RAM memory card.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah, cool.
No. Oh, wow.
So the game is going to make use of the cartridge.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Of the cartridge.
Wow.
That sounds really cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's the piece of news I wanted to share.
That's awesome.
Today. Yeah, I mean, so the game will be packaged in a cardboard box, because that cardboard box will contain the disc in a jewel case, and also a custom-made cartridge.
Wow. Carlos, the thing is now, I've got a bit of a dilemma, so now I have to choose, do I get the Dreamcast version or do I get the Saturn version?
I want the Saturn version!
I've got this a bit for that.
This is a really evil, evil plan of ours, to make people buy both.
I always loved the Sega CD games where there was the cartridge and the CD. So you got like the CD quality music, and then you got the boost
from the CD, and it would play the CD audio with the Mega Drive cart. Yeah,
there you go, people. You heard that here first.
Yeah,
that's amazing news. Thank you for sharing it with us, Carlos.
Exclusive.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Wow, I don't know how I can actually compose myself after hearing that news.
Actually, a couple of weeks ago in Retro Barcelona, we at Retro Sumus, we like to joke by saying that we made our first sort of investment. We decided to buy one of these box sets, the game and card box for the Saturn. We said, okay, let's look around, find a booth where they are selling retro games. And find the cheapest one, because we are going to break the box apart to measure it, to try to replicate it as carefully as we can.
I presume you ended up with the Ultraman game then.
Well, I would have loved to find that game, because it's awful. I mean, so it wouldn't have been so painful to break it apart. But sadly, we found a copy of Fatal Fury Real Bout Special.
Okay.
That it was only 15 euros, I think. So we said, okay, let's buy this one.
You sacrificed that then?
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes.
Special's pretty good.
Yeah, I love the game. I love the game. But
come on!
Exactly. So I think I will keep the game, but sadly the box will have to die.
It's dying for a great cause though. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. All right, guys, I think that will pretty much do it for this episode of the Dream Pod. I mean, there's been so much like interesting and fantastic stuff on this episode. I'm shaking with excitement. Unless there's anything else anybody else wants to just kind of dive into quickly. I take that as a no. Okay. So this has been episode 20 of the Dream Pod. Once again, I want to give my utmost thanks to Carlos for joining us and being a fantastic guest host. Thank you, Carlos. Is there anything that you wanted to give a shout out to? I mean, your Twitter account or website or anything like that?
Well, you can follow us on facebook.com/RetroSumus. On Twitter, YouTube, and now SoundCloud as well, all with the same username. And well, please stay tuned because we will release our next Death Diaries video, hopefully in the next few days. And well, congratulations for 20 great episodes of the Dream Pod.
Well, thank you.
There's 20. I'm not sure if they've all been great.
Yeah, well, thanks very much again, Carlos. Obviously, the usual team is also here. Thank you, Rob, for joining us. You're on Twitter at...
Nicholas J.
Oh, and you can also find Rob at T3.com.
Oh, you can.
That's T3.com, I think, is the Twitter handle. You can find Aaron on Twitter at...
The Gagaman.
At The Gagaman, yeah. Caleb is on YouTube at Blandco, I believe it is.
Yes, it is.
Indeed. And you can find me on Twitter at Tom Leesey. And you can also find me sort of floating around the Facebook page. That's the Dreamcast Junkyard Facebook. That's facebook.com/ the Dreamcast Junkyard. And also you can find my and the rest of the guys' ramblings on the Dreamcast Junkyard main site, which is www.thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. And last but not least, our Twitter account is at Sega Junkyard. That's been episode 20 of the Dream Pod. We hope you've enjoyed it. And thank you very much. We'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Por favor, retire el disco.
Please stop this disc now.